TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
All right, gentlemen, I don't know if we got really much of anything to talk about today on this edition on a Wednesday taping of Raised by Wolves. I mean, I don't know if there's really anything going on with the Wolves right now. No, I'm totally kidding.
You know, I really liked Ryan Saunders' suit last night.
That was really, really awesome.
It was sharp.
That was really, really sharp. Yeah, that was great. Manny Hill, Dane Moore, Danny Cunningham. We're all here to recap a pretty fun basketball game last night. Ryan Saunders is 1-0. Nice start for him in his coaching debut in the NBA. And Dane, what were some of your takeaways? Because that was, we can get into the terrific game that Andrew Wiggins had, and if this can sort of continue with him, if Ryan sort of unlocked something with him. But just overall, the game was just a lot of fun.
I mean, absolutely. And I think our focus, you know, we should turn to Andrew Wiggins in that game. I think it was probably the best game of his career, at least to my memory. But I do think we saw some things from Ryan Saunders as well. As simple as, you know, managing a team in a late game situation in a close game against another playoff opponent. I mean, that's impressive. But I think we also started to see little remnants of changes that are going to come that depart from the Thibodeau construct and kind of move into how Ryan is going to put his stamp on this team. They definitely played with more pace on Tuesday night. I think we've started to see small little rotation tweaks, namely Taj Gibson and Dario Saric shared the floor for a little bit. Also Jeff Teague and Tyus Jones shared the floor for a little bit prior to this game. Gibson and Saric had only played one minute together all season. Teague and Jones had only played 4 minutes together all season. So you're seeing a little bit of that. And then Andrew Wiggins' game kind of, you know, changed the overall shot selection for the Wolves. And they were getting to the basket. You know, it was the classic kind of drive and kick type performance. They got 37 shots at the rim. Wiggins shot 18 free throws. And they got up 31 threes. I mean, it was things you would want to see and things that a coach affects.
And I think the most frustrating aspect of it is that we haven't seen this from Wiggins enough, and we talk about that all the time. But if Saunders is the one that can kind of get this out of Wiggins, it has to put him in the driver's seat to have that interim tag removed at some point. I'm not saying he's going to get 40, 10, and 4 every night, because that's not feasible from guys outside of like James Harden right now.
Right.
But if you can unlock Wiggins to an extent and make him look like a near all-star, that's got to be the number one goal for Saunders, right?
Well, you use him in a different way, and I don't mean this to be hyperbolic, but James Harden is a good example. I mean, the Houston Rockets, once Mike D'Antoni, you know, came in there, they switched the way James Harden was used. He became, you know, a point guard for that squad, and they ran their offense through him, and you saw so much of that last night in this game. So it's not just about, like, you know, trying to get into the mental, you know, crevices of Andrew Wiggins' brain, which is probably something that's important too. But if you use him differently, that might help the process. And I think we saw that from Ryan Saunders and, you know, quote unquote, unlocked Andrew Wiggins, at least for one game.
Well, I wonder about that too, in terms of just what you're doing, you know, how you're using Andrew, but also being able to empower him somehow. And this is not to suggest that Tibbs wasn't trying to empower Andrew at all, but sometimes there's a certain type of way to do it. There's a certain type of conversation that you can have with him before a game that might sort of unlock something. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to see if Ryan has been the guy to sort of get Wiggins to play like this for an entire game and to put something together. And again, like we said, it's not like he needs to drop 40 points every single night, but you could just see in the type of game that he played that this is the Andrew Wiggins that we have been clamoring for almost 5 years now, and you just hope that it can continue.
And at what point will we know whether or not how he played was a coincidence or actual meaning behind it?
Right.
Like, we don't know that that was anything more than a coincidence. We don't know that anything changed inside of him because of the firing. I mean, he's had good games under Tibbs. He just hasn't played like that.
And in Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this is all just the perfect storm of coincidences, and Andrew Wiggins is still really the Andrew Wiggins we've seen all year.
Well, Friday's gonna tell us a lot, or tell us at least a little bit more, right? If he can basically, not saying go out and drop 40 against the Mavericks, which, I mean, if he did, great. But if he kind of picks up where he left off last night on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's just we gotta give it time. We gotta give all of it time with Ryan Saunders, and you go. You assess it in the aggregate. There's going to be 42 Ryan Saunders coach games this season. And for Ryan, it's fine if he coaches a few bad games, and it's fine if Andrew Wiggins has a few bad games. That happens over the courses of the season for even the best coaches, even the best players. So I don't want to overreact too much if Wiggins rattles off three straight good games, or I don't want to overreact too much if Wiggins, you know, kind of puts up one of his more typical, like, 14-point games on 6 of 17 shooting on Friday. Like, there can be ups and downs over the course of the season. It's just about, like, raising that kind of median level performance from Wiggins. That's what the goal of Saunders is.
I kind of want to just be able to positively notice Andrew on the floor more. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even really focused on, like, the numbers. I just want to see if, over the course of these next handful of games, if you're noticing what he's doing on the floor from a positive perspective. If you're not so glued into, you know, any of the bad shots that he might take. I mean, he's going to take bad shots every game. Every player that gets enough shots will take one or two bad shots a game.
It's cutting the number of those down.
Right. It's cutting them down. And if you just start to notice him doing more good things on the floor than bad things on the floor, and you just start noticing him being a part of the game and being engaged in the game more, I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking for.
I'm totally with you, Manny. It's about a consistency of effort. And
yeah.
And when you see that effort isn't there, that's the coach's job to, you know, go over to him on the bench or pregame or whatever and say, "What's up, Andrew? Like, are you here with me tonight?" I mean, that is coaching. And we know one thing about Thibodeau is he operated more in a silo of his own that was somewhat separate from his players, and certainly more separate than what we saw Ryan doing on the sidelines on Tuesday night, where one, he was just giving guys high fives. It's like step one, but you saw him.
You are allowed to high five players. We learned that last night.
And, you know, I don't know if you guys saw this too, but like Dario Saric, who was kind of struggling in his first half stint, when he came out of the game, you know, Ryan went down to the end of the bench and you know, talked to him. And in reading John Krasinski's piece from The Athletic, he said that Dario told him that Ryan assured him that he's going to need him in the second half. You know, I'm going to need you in the second half to.
He told him he was going to hit a big three.
Yeah, and he did. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's those are coaching things as well.
I was thinking about that as you were saying that too. Is with like Josh Okogie too last night, where he's not having a great shooting night. I mean, he hasn't really had a great shooting stretch here the last.
I mean,
handful of games.
The Thunder essentially stopped guarding him.
Yeah, but then he hits the big three late in the fourth quarter. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I want to see. You know what I mean? Like, that's the stuff that where you can – you don't forget about him struggling from shooting from the field, but you know that he's capable of playing in a late-game situation and hitting a big shot, and he's not going to hesitate when his opportunity comes to him. And I think that that's – again, and I don't want to overreact, but that part of that is coaching, to be able to have the confidence in the players that you have and to be able to instill confidence in these players and coach them up and build them up and encourage them. I mean, I don't know. This just seems like it's going to be something different now under Ryan Saunders the rest of the way here.
I mean, Tom Thibodeau said all the right things. He said it's about a multiple effort mentality. He said that consistently. He said, you know, it's about getting to the rim. It's about getting to the three-point line, and it's about getting to the free throw line, and it's about getting to the three-point line. We saw the Timberwolves actually do that on Tuesday, and the difference is, you know, is Tibbs wasn't there, and sometimes, you know, the mouthpiece that it's coming from, you know, makes a difference, and I think optimistically we can hope, if not assume, that there's going to be more of that going forward, and that, you know, that puts this team back in the playoff conversation, in my opinion.
Yeah. So when you look at the game as a whole, what did we see anything differently defensively in the game last night? It was, I mean, the Thunder went on some runs, and I mean, they're 10 games over 500 for a reason, because they've got Russell Westbrook and they've got Paul George and Steven Adams and all these guys. But did we see the Wolves do anything, deviate defensively away from anything that they were doing under Tom Thibodeau, Dane?
The one thing I noticed, I don't think that the system defensively changed at all. And Danny, I know you were there at the press conference on Monday too. Derrick Rose said they didn't even really address defense
at all. And truthfully, I don't think it's fair to expect it to have changed at this point, because
totally.
Saunders had, what, an hour 45 on the practice floor with them the day after they fired Tibbs in a shoot-around while having to travel. I don't think it's fair to expect much to change systematically quite yet. That's something you have to give time.
Well, and the defense has been good since Robert Covington
started playing. Yeah, that too.
They're the ninth defensive rating, have the ninth best defensive rating in the league since then. But the one thing I did like to see, and I guess you wouldn't call this necessarily like five-man schematics, but he did pull Anthony Tolliver out of the game early in the second quarter, and went and brought Jeff Teague in for him in that situation, you know, to downshift into a smaller lineup where Tibbs had just kind of been using Tolliver exclusively in that backup small forward role for Covington. And I thought that made a lot of sense when you have the wings that you're guarding in Oklahoma City being Paul George, Hamidou Diallo, and Terrence Ferguson. Those are three great athletes, and it's not as if Anthony Tolliver is a poor defender. He just can't keep up with those guys. So by going with Jeff Teague, you slide Josh Okogie into that matchup, and you go smaller. And I thought that helped the team in the second half. And those are the in-game kind of adjustments you like to see be made dependent on what the opponent's doing. Tibbs so often predetermined, it seemed, what it is he was going to do schematically and rotationally. And the only time we ever saw Tibbs's rotations alter was when necessity provided it.
Mm-hmm. When someone got injured or somebody got hurt.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I thought that was cool in the second quarter. I was typing out, I was like, oh, this Anthony Tolliver like matchup is not going well. And then sure enough, like next whistle, you saw Jeff Teague checking, the 6 foot tall Jeff Teague checking in for the 6 foot eight Anthony Tolliver. I mean, that's a cool observation to be made by Saunders and to act on. So I think there's going to be more. There's going to be more changes coming, and it makes sense to not make sweeping adjustments right now. I mean, you're in the middle of a playoff hunt.
And I think you kind of have to wait for both Rose and Covington to get healthy too, and see what you've got with the full complement of players. Because I don't think we can necessarily judge him in everything until you get those guys back. And I can make the argument that Covington is the second most important piece to winning, just because of how he ties everything together. He's not the most talented guy on the team or anything like that, but he's so important to what they do on both ends, and I think that matters a lot.
I absolutely agree. It'll be interesting to see how he fits back in, and hopefully we'll have a timetable on that by the end of the week. I know that's what Tibbs was saying when he was here, that we would
have more of a firm timetable Friday, he said, we would they would hope to know more. I don't think that's information that'll change because of the coaching change. I think that the medical staff should be separate from who's in charge. But, for instance, last night when the Thunder decided not to guard Josh Okogie, you can't do that when Covington's on the floor instead of Okogie in that situation.
Oh, totally. And, I mean, that's a big concern I had with Covington, you know, going out, was how does this team keep up a volume of threes? I mean, obviously we know losing Covington, an all-NBA defender, is huge, but even with Covington, who shoots, is very open in the shots that he will take from beyond the arc, I was concerned that this team wouldn't be able to keep up a volume of threes without him. And it does seem like with Anthony Tolliver and Josh Okogie that they're making some steps in that direction. But I do think that once you have Covington back, of course the defense is going to improve, but also you're going to be able to play the offense you more so want to run, because they do have to guard Covington, as you said, Danny.
So, Dane, you did a piece on Monday, your regular piece for us at 1500ESPN.com, and you basically got into four things that Ryan Saunders can do differently than Tom Thibodeau. And we've already kind of gotten into that a little bit, but let's just kind of go through some of them and sort of take us through some of the things that you highlighted on some things that Ryan can evidently do different than Tibbs.
Well, and this doesn't seem like a novel concept, but playing Andrew Wiggins for the first 16 straight minutes of a game, or anyone for that long, does not seem like a good idea. It was just...
Marathon shifts are bad.
That was disappointing to see, and I think it taps into probably the biggest frustration, the biggest thing you can call antiquated of the Tom Thibodeau era was how he managed minutes. And, you know, hopefully we can see Ryan Saunders move away from that. And we did to some extent on Tuesday, but I thought it was so funny at Saturday's practice. I asked Josh Okogie, you know, you play with so much energy. You know, how have you burnt out in any of the games? And he said the one game he had burnt out in is when he was in the quote unquote wig shift, and that marathon shift where he described Wiggins as a dog who looked like a dog who hadn't drunk water in 3 days. And, you know, you just can't have that. So hopefully Saunders can move away from that. He played Wiggins for the first 14 minutes of the game on Tuesday night. And then in the second half, it was a little bit shorter. It was 10 minutes. And that was also kind of informed by foul trouble. But that's, you know, that's one big change that I think makes sense, because with Wiggins, if we want to see him, you know, maintain that consistent energy, it's important to manage the minutes he's playing. So he has gas in the tank to work with. So that was one key thing I saw. Do you guys have anything on that before I move into something else?
I think the marathon thing a lot has to do with Robert Covington being out, obviously, because Wiggins' marathon shift didn't happen when Covington was healthy, but it did for Derrick Rose, and I think that he needs to keep Derrick Rose's minutes down a little bit too. They can't be up as high as they were at the end of the Thibodeau era.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too. I was going to bring that up. That was the other one where it was Rose was checking in midway through the first and never checking out. So so yeah, that's what, and I just think the way to eliminate some of that is to get rid of positional distinctions to some degree, and by doing that, you can get away from some of the roster construct. And just because Taj Gibson and Dario Saric are power forwards on the depth chart doesn't mean they can't occasionally, you know, play center if a matchup calls for it. And you know, and same thing with Tolliver. So I think it was good, again, to see a few of those things happen that allows a diversity of the ways in which that you can get your players in and out of the game. It can be a quicker mix, and you can again adjust to what the opponent is bringing that night, not just what you decided to do. So I'd like to see that. I mean, we've seen success of it before. Even something like Gorgui Dieng and Karl Towns, like playing next to each other, they did that for an entire season in 2016-17.
Yeah.
And had a positive net rating, actually, in the 2,161 minutes they played alongside each other. I mean, it seemed weird to say some of these things, no, we're never doing. And I would just like to see a little bit of flexibility there.
You talked about switching too on the defensive side too. Go into that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I just thought like one of the coolest things of when that Robert Covington run was happening is you would see like three players defending the pick and roll. And not in just like the dropping coverage where Karl Anthony Towns would just float back to the rim. You would see Teague switch with Towns, and then again to Covington. And it's a three player switch. And really, what that is a product of having multiple switch partners out there. For the first 2 years of the Thibodeau era, Tibbs said this. He goes, you know, we don't have enough switch partners in our second unit to be able to, you know, be overly liberal with that. So it was very limiting. And in the modern NBA, that can be killer. And I think that was a huge reason why they were, you know, in the bottom four of defensive rating both of the past two seasons. So, you know, try a couple of different things. See which guys can be switch partners. See how that can work. And some of the creativity that Tibbs was instilling before, you know, you can lean further into that. And, I mean, it's kind of hard to describe on a podcast, but if you look at some of the film, and there's a little bit in the article up at 1500, you can see that there's just something so different than what they were doing. I mean, I think about the Houston series. Every single time the Rockets set a high ball screen with Clint Capella, it was a deep drop by Karl Anthony Towns, and he just went all the way back to the restricted area, and he begged James Harden or Chris Paul to come all the way to the rim. And what that was, you know, would give them in theory was a mid-range jump shot. But what so often happened was you would get into that area and then it would be a little drop-off for a lob to Clint Capella. If you can be up more and more aggressive and even just straight switch there, you don't beckon the offense into your space. You can be the aggressor in those situations by being more aggressive with your switches. So I'd love to see more of that. My guess would be you don't see a ton of it until Covington does come back, because you really can get away with him moving on to anyone positions 1 through 5. But you do have Josh Okogie. I mean, we've seen him be able to move his feet with ones and also be able to push around to center if he gets buried in a switch on the block. Like, I think you can try some more of those things, because what we learned with Towns is that straight dropping style is just, it just really doesn't appear to be what he wants to do. He wants to react on the fly and make his decisions. And that's what switching allows you to do.
Are there any pairs of players you'd like to see get more time together? I know that yesterday was we saw Tyus and Teague play together for the second or third time this season. Or are there any two players that really don't get to share the floor a ton right now that you would like to see spend some time together on the court?
I mean, I talked about it earlier. I really think Taj Gibson and Dario Saric makes a lot of sense to me. And I know I just pointed to Gorgui Dieng and trying some things with him. But when you're playing a smaller opponent, I think you can really go with just a three big man rotation of Towns, Gibson, and Saric, and use Gibson at center more often and have whatever half or a third of those minutes be alongside Dario Saric. So that would probably be the biggest one, I would say, off the top of my head. And situationally try a couple more of the dual point guard lineups. I think, we've talked about this at length. Things are working well when you put the ball in Tyus Jones's hands. Mm-hmm. And I think there's just situations that it makes sense to start the offense with him. So if you can pair him on the wing a little bit more, actually maybe cut into Josh Okogie's minutes a little bit with Tyus, if you can find a rotational tweak that allows that to happen. I think Tyus Jones is just a player that's driving winning more so than Josh Okogie is at this point.
And we saw a little bit of it last night, and Dane, you alluded to it earlier, that they're starting to play a little faster too. And that's something we've been talking about for weeks, for months, right? About just picking up the pace and just playing a little bit faster. And really, I always like to talk about like dictating the tempo of the game. Like maybe, you know, not always trying to play into the hands of what your opponent wants to do, but taking charge and taking control. Like if you want to play faster, just go ahead and play faster. Don't wait for your opponent to sort of dictate the tone and the pace of the game. And I think if they can start playing faster, it's going to be to their benefit because they're going to have more control of some of these games.
I went back and looked through the 90 shots that they took last night and tracked the amount of shots that they took with under 4 seconds left on the shot clock. And last season they shot 705 shots with under 4 seconds left on the shot clock. That was the most in the league. Oof. By a wide margin, even more than the Memphis Grizzlies. It's about 9 a game. And I thought it was really interesting that last night, after Jeff Teague got ejected from the game, they only shot 2 shots with under 4 seconds left in the shot clock in that game, both of which came towards the end of the game in the fourth quarter. So pace is one way to track it, like the amount of possessions you have, you know, per game. But there's also just how much time are you using of each shot clock? And the real danger is getting to the end of shot clocks. And to be able to find ways to avoid that as much as possible, or to at least be in your rhythm once the clock's at 6, 5, 4, like that's key. Once you pass off that grenade, man, you're not gonna be able to convert at a high rate. Entering the game, I don't, hasn't updated, you know, since last night, but they were in late shot clock situations. Their effective field goal percentage this season is 37%, and that's the fifth worst in the NBA. So they're just not good at it. They don't have Jimmy Butler. They don't have Jamal Crawford to, you know, get them those shots at the end of the shot clock. It's just not a strength of Jeff Teague's in the way it was for Butler and Crawford. So to move away from that, I think is just one of those small ways to really improve the team's offensive efficiency. And just it, like you said, Manny, sometimes it is just as simple as saying, let's go. Like, we're up. We got to be up the floor. We got to be past the half court line in 5 seconds every time. Like, that's a rule. Just, we got to do that. And when you saw them do that last night, the results, you know, the results were staggering. I loved after a Paul George made free throw in the middle of the first quarter, when, if you guys remember, the Thunder kind of went on a run there in the first quarter after the Wolves started off hot, and immediately Dario Saric grabs the ball out of the net. He swings it out to Jeff Teague on an outlet, who immediately passes it up to Andrew Wiggins, who hits a 16-foot jump shot. They got 2 points in 4 seconds right there. You can do that more often, and that's coaching right there. That is a made free throw package that they have put in place. And
a lot of teams have that kind of thing. The Wolves just haven't.
I mean, they haven't. I'm sure Thibodeau has it in there, but it's something that Ryan on that play would have, you know, what, as Jeff is standing up over by half court, you know, while they're shooting free throws, he says, "Hey, we're running whatever they call that play." And there are ways that coach, like, pace is a way that a coach really can, you know, put his fingerprints on the game. Obviously, we've seen it with Mike D'Antoni in Houston, and then in New Orleans with Alvin Gentry is like my favorite example of that. Last season, is before Gentry was there, the Pelicans were 27th in the league in pace. They moved up to first last season, and they did it while having Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins in their front court. And it was a product of changes that Gentry put in place. He had his team practice with 18-second shot clocks and 6-second half-court violations. That was something they did all through training camp. And by doing that, you classically condition your team, you know, to play at a faster pace. So I think Ryan, it's going to be important to him to do some of those sort of things. And I would expect that the pace only increases for the rest of the season.
I say they just set the shot clock at 7 and have some fun.
Do a little 7 seconds or less deal.
Let's do it. Have some fun, baby. Crank that thing up.
You gotta tell Jeff Teague, man.
Gotta tell Jeff Teague it's at like 4.
All right, Jeff, 4 seconds right away. Let's go. Let's take a second here and just talk a little bit about just how cool this kind of was for Ryan Saunders specifically, right? Like, this is, I mean, you don't want to make too huge of a deal out of one regular season NBA game, but I think for a guy that whose father's fingerprints are kind of all over the history of this franchise, and for him to sort of under difficult circumstances to step in and get a win in his debut as a coach, I mean, I gotta think it was a huge moment for him. And the interview he did on NBA TV afterwards too was really cool. I don't know if either one of you guys saw that, but that was really cool. So it's kind of, this whole thing is just, it's just really fun. It's just really cool. And I don't know how this season is going to go the rest of the way, but I'm rooting for it to go well for him, because it's something that he's been working hard for. And that was just cool to see last night for him specifically.
I think last night is everything he ever dreamt of as a kid. Outside of the way it happened, I don't think he grew up saying, oh, someone's going to get fired and that's how I'm going to become head coach of the Wolves and take over. But I think that the outcome was everything that as a child he ever wanted to happen. I think that last night was probably a life goal for him. I think it's pretty fair to say that.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think Ryan gets that it's about the fans too. And I think he is so excited that this group can be something that the fan base connects to. I mean, I can speak on my behalf and say, this is my second year covering the team, and it's the most fun I've had watching a Timberwolves game. I mean, last night it was different. And I mean, I don't want to attribute all of that to kind of the cloud Tom Thibodeau put over the team, but there was something to the notion that this team was not fun, even though it was winning 47 games last year under Tom Thibodeau. It was about the style they played. It was about the characters in the locker room, and it was about the coach himself. And I think it's a cool story, because it's an exciting story that has chapters that I'm looking forward to reading going forward. Like, this is going to be fun the rest of the way. I tweeted out after the game, once it ended, that there's only 164 hours until the Wolves play in Philadelphia against Jimmy Butler. I mean, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm ecstatic to go to that game in Philadelphia next week and take that all in. I mean, the NBA is in an awesome spot, and for the Wolves to kind of recapture or to capture some of the fun that is in the NBA, I mean, I think that that's huge for a Minnesota fan base that needs something to connect to.
How fun is Friday going to be too? The first totally. Home game.
I'm so excited too, because, and Dane, I know you can speak to this as well, when they do the player introductions and then the coach, and the music was just blared all the way up to drown out the boos, and I'm so excited for that to not happen on Friday night.
No, I want them to let it, the standing ovation happen, and then they got like drop a really sweet song. Like, something has to happen where it's just like, because it was so awkward every game, and it would be like,
it was funny.
It was funny, and then they would like try and play like some pump up techno song afterwards, and like, I don't know, like, let's get the Ryan Saunders standing ovation, like, pump up the music, keep it going like all the way until Karl Anthony Towns wins the tip off. Like, that's going to be an awesome moment that I'm with you. I'm excited to see and think about how different it has been than the previous, whatever, 20 home games this season.
Do we think it's a sellout on Friday night?
Oh, 100%. It's Luka, so. Too, man.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk. Like, it was a good game on the schedule, like, bottom of the line. I mean, a weekend game is always fun, but it's Luka Doncic, too.
And Prince Knight.
Will this be Dirk Nowitzki's last game?
Yeah, they only come here once. Well, I mean, Dirk hasn't said that he's retiring. But I believe the Mavs only come here once.
Interesting. Hmm. Yeah. So it's going to be an awesome game. And
multiple
then,
reasons for people to show up.
And then it's, you got the Pelicans again the next night. And then the next game, I believe, is the Jimmy Butler game in Philadelphia. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it, again, a fun stretch. perfect. Like, that's exactly what this fan base needs.
It's going to be so lit over the next couple of weeks.
As
it's
the
gonna
kids
be,
say.
It's going to be so lit, as the kids say. All right, Dane, great stuff. We'll catch up with you, or I'll see you Friday. I'll be at the game Friday.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know I said that about the Atlanta game a couple of weeks ago, but.
You missed a good one.
Yeah.
That was a fun game.
I watched it on TV, and that was, yeah. I kind of want to forget about that game, to be perfectly honest with you.
Me too.
But yeah, Dane, good stuff. I'll catch up with you Friday. Danny, we're going to do another one tomorrow, I think.
Woo!
Another one of these bad boys tomorrow. And yeah, the Wolves are fun again. This is going to be good stuff. For Dane Moore, you can find him on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. Follow Danny at RealDCunningham. And of course, follow me at MannyHill84. Thanks for listening. And we will talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves.